Blog Talk Radio.
Showtime.
Greetings and welcome to CAG Do About Your Dog and You. And this is a show about blind persons that use service animals in their everyday life. And I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, and we have some sad news to share today. Our co-host, Mr. Charlie C., that we finally refer to him, Charlie Crawford, passed this morning around 5 a.m. He had had a stroke a couple of days ago, and you know he had been sick on and off, and he had a remarkable, miraculous healing. But this was a stroke that he had, and he was home in hospice for the last few days, and he went home to be with the Lord this morning. So we are going to have our hostess, Miss Renee, read an email that was sent out by a dear friend and Penny Reeder, who is the former president of the National Guide Dog Users, that Charlie has been a faithful contributor and member of for years, and he was their advocate, chair of their advocate committee. So, Ms. Renee, if you can kill the music and read the email, I will appreciate it, and we will take it from there. Of course, we're going to dispense with all our regular segments and all, and just honor our brother Charlie Crawford. So, please, Ms. Renee.
Well, as you pointed out, this is an email from Penny Reeder, to the National Capital Area Chapter of the ACB, which is the American Council of the Blind. I'm writing to share the very sad news that our dear friend, Charlie Crawford, passed away at 4:45 a.m. this morning. Charlie was at home with his wife, Susan, and his seeing eye dog, Raisin. And his death followed a short illness. We've lost a true advocate and friend. This is a sad day for the blindness community. 49 years ago, with the guidance of Durrad McDaniel, Charlie was the founder and first president of ACB's Massachusetts affiliate, the Blind Leadership Club, which later became known as the Bay State Council of the Blind. After directing the client assistance program at the Mass Commission for the Blind, Charlie was appointed commissioner in 1984, a position he held until 1998 when he left Boston to become executive director of ACB. As soon as Charlie and Sue moved to Silver Spring in the late 90s, Charlie became one of the NCAC's most enthusiastic members, and his enthusiasm for NCAC and ACB of Maryland and all of us who have been lucky enough to call him our friend has never waned. It is particularly poignant that Charlie should pass away on the anniversary of 9/11. That terrible morning in 2001, his primary concern was that all the national staff get home safely from downtown Washington, D.C. So typical of Charlie. He made sure that every one of us was safely headed toward home and family before he and his then-seeing-eye dog, Ruthie, found their way onto the metro. Charlie spent his entire life advocating for people with disabilities and the human and civil rights of all people. His caring nature has been a reminder to all of us who called him friend. We are not sure how we get through this sad day or the ones that will follow without Charlie. He has been such a wonderful friend to so many of us, and such an enthusiastic and effective advocate for all of our human and civil rights. Our best advice is to make the most of this in every day that comes and to tell all the people in our lives who are important to us that we love them as often as possible. Sincerely, Penny Reeder.
And Ms. Renee, would you read my response when I received this this email? This is evoked it some things in Reverend Reagan, his appreciation that I sent out.
Well, this is greetings from Reverend Ray, the producer and host of the Blog Talk radio show CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. Charlie was the co-host and founding member of this show, which started this year, April. Our first guest was the new president of the Seeing Eye Guide Dog School. Charlie will be missed by his new radio family and listeners. During our hour-long show, at the half hour, we did a segment called Charlie's Corner with Charlie C., information from you, from and for the DMV. Let me read that again. Charlie C., information from and for the DMV. And it was it was to show and tell you about advocating for yourself and others. You can go to CAGDU.org and listen to Brother Charlie's last shows. Yes, microphone number 2 will have a black cover over it for the next 30 days. And yes, my brother Charlie, you will be missed. From your black brother, Reverend Ray, to my white brother, with love. P.S. Because Charlie, the only color you saw was love.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Renee. And it is, we knew Charlie was sick, but as always, he's been a survivor. And, you know, like I said, when he was sick not too long ago, and he had a miraculous recovery. So when this situation came a few days ago with the stroke, which is a different animal, we thought that, you know, he would recover. But I guess his work has been done, and the Lord had called them all home. So, and oftentimes like this, we don't grieve for the person. We usually grieve for the loss that we had. But I would, for myself, I can honestly say that I enjoyed our time together. And Charlie was the person that responsibility to get the amazing guests that we have had on with their guide dogs and how the guide dogs assist them in some of the very important, impressive, and high-ranking jobs and positions that these folks had. Charlie knew everybody across the spectrum, especially in the American Council of the Blind organization, as well as the National Federation of the Blind. So we're going to be talking about, you know, Charlie, the effects of just interested, you know, that Charlie always upstaging everybody that he would die on a 9/11. So we would always remember that. And but we will talk a little bit about that. And I am so glad, Ms. Renee, that you, in the beginning of our founding of the CAGDU radio show, that you you know, chided us and twisted our arms emotionally and spiritually to do our story. And I am so appreciative now of that. And you can go to CAGDU.org and listen to, and within two segments, two shows that me and Charlie revealed, you know, some of our walk in life and getting the guide dog and why we got a guide dog and something a little bit about our families, a little bit about our background. And if we have not relented to Ms. Renee's iron hand of of doing that, you know, look the valuable information and the sharing that Charlie did with us about his life. Because as long as I have known Charlie over the several decades, I did not know that he was Puerto Rican. I did not know that he had a twin brother. So there was a number of things that was revealed, and he was on his ninth guide dog. And then I found out later that a roommate of mine's at Maryland School for the Blind, Mr. Bob Lewis, when he was there at the time, seeing that getting his dog, him and Charlie was in the same class during that time. So, you know, it's just such a small, small world. So, Ms. Renee,
and
you know,
jump in here. May I jump in here for a moment?
Yeah, I was going to ask you. Go ahead. Yes.
Yeah, you know, our show is called Tag Do Your Dog and You. And many in the community, in the blind community, it's a small community, and we know each other to speak to each other. And these are both sighted spouses, sighted assistants, blind and low-vision people. And we make certain assumptions that we're blind and that our life has begun at that point. But I think that your comment is so telling. Many of these people knew Charlie for a really long time, and as he would interview them, some of the questions that were posed, he would say, wow, I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
And so I want to encourage, you know, I want to encourage families. You know, COVID-19 has taught us something, is that sometimes we can't get out, we can't interact like we did, and the busyness of our day keeps us from really delving past the, hey, how are you, and people go, I'm fine. They could be hurting, they could be sad, they could be experiencing loss, and I think COVID has highlighted the mental health status of people. It doesn't mean that you need to be locked away, but some people are experiencing deep sadness, depression, just the aloneness of it. So I want to encourage listeners to have real conversations about your family. You may be the only one that has information. You may be the only person that is a connector between generations. You may have a part of your story. I think almost every guest that we've ever had, when they tell how they lost their sight, story that gives hope to somebody recently blind or somebody who hadn't thought about a situation a certain way. So just want to encourage you. So many times we gather around in the grieving family and we mourn for 30 days or so, and then we forget the promise that we make, which is we're going to get together more often, and we're going to tell our story. We're going to write it down for the generations that come. So I'm just feeling like everybody
I
else.
Know.
Yeah, I'm feeling a very decidedly somber today. This is both 9/11 and here in the DMV, and that's the District, Maryland, and Virginia. It's cloudy and overcast. It's as though the universe is grieving with us today.
That is so poignant. And the ditto what you said, Ms. Renee, about the surface conversations we had with people. You know, yeah, oh, how you doing? I'm doing okay. Then move on. You know, yeah, you know. But and as you, and my observations have been so heightened when I hear, the guests that we had on that Charlie known for, 20, 30 years, some of these folks worked for him as an employee, and some of them he worked for them as an employer. And to think that some of the things that they didn't even know about each other or know of each other, and they worked in that proximity. I mean, it wasn't like they just, passed each other the night. I mean, these people worked like 8, 9, 10 hours, Monday through Friday together, over years. And some of the things that say, oh, I didn't know that about you. Oh, I didn't know that about you. So, I agree with you, that we need to really talk to each other, go to the different layers below that layer of how you doing, pro formal, and you know, and then just moving on, So I definitely ring that bell. So that is our music, and as we have trained our guests, we do train our guests, and now we and train our audience. When you hear that, it's time for us to go to break, and I am Reverend Radio Ray Razor. You're listening to CAG Do About Your Dog and You, and our dear friend, co-host and founder, Mr. Charlie Crawford, passed this morning, 9/11 September, and it's 2020. So we'll be back on the other side.
You are listening to CAGDU About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Back to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, where we are paying tribute to Charlie Crawford. Over to you, Reverend Ray.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, back to, you know, we try to say our show, three things we try to definitely give you, and that's information, inspiration, and entertainment. And Charlie certainly helped us do those three things. Definitely he was full of information. He was a strong advocate. And matter of fact, he was the chair of the advocate committee for the National Guide Dog Users Group, as well as the chair for the NCAC, and that's the Silver Springs ACB affiliate, which is the National Capital Area Chapter. So he was really a strong advocate for blindness and guide dog users, and the two focus things there is, one, making sure a person that has service animals, and specifically guide dogs, have access to public entities like everyone else, to be able to go into hotels, restaurants, movie theaters, parks, and all, and break those barriers down to educate, well, you know, educate those who are in charge that these service dogs are very well trained, very well disciplined, and they're just to assist us to get us to these things. And then two is for education of person understanding what the guide dogs do. So, and especially when it comes to being able to be employed. And a lot of persons that you all heard guests, special guests we had on this show, the dog brought their guide dog really, really enhanced their lifestyle with being able to give them the mobility to be able to move around the city, move around their community, and move around the country in a lot of aspects, and using their guide dog with little or no assistance. And so I encourage you again, thanks to Ms. Renee, that you go to our website, cagdu.org, and listen to some of our past shows with Charlie, especially Charlie's Corner, where he, you know, bring information about the things that he was working on in accessibility for persons with guide dogs, and as well as for a blind person. So I really, really encourage you to do that. So, Ms. Renee, just
Reverend Ray,
share some of your observations.
Well, let me jump in here. You know, a lot of blind and low-vision people listen to our show, and for them, it's almost a second language, the DMV, I mean, the ACB, the BNCAC. But for many of us who are unfamiliar or newly in the blind community, some things aren't quite as cut and dry as people who are more familiar. But I want to go back to your first comment that Charlie was an advocate for persons using dog guides, guide dogs. And the reason this is so important, you know, in the last few years, people have utilized or balkanized the whole service animal profession, the use of service animals. I mean, we've got everything from peacocks to I think there was a rat or a chipmunk. And, you know,
snake,
you know, there was
yeah.
a time, yes, I was recently in church where a man said that he had a comfort dog. It was a puppy that ran all over the church. And the thing of it is talk a little bit about the work that had been done. Now, everybody calls them seeing eye dogs. Not all of them are seeing eye dogs. And you can speak to that a little bit. But why the new advocacy for the role of the service dog? And I'll talk about that specifically because our program is Your Dog and You. Why it's so important that we become stronger advocates for the service dog. And you mentioned that they are well-trained. So I'll let you take it from there.
Well, we have over 16 different guide dog schools that's recognized in the United States and then guide dog schools all over the world. And in 1929, Miss Hustis, Blue Blood, went to Germany to do a story. She was a writer about guide dogs that was helping the German blind soldiers, and she thought it was a great idea that she bring this concept back to the United States, which she did, met a couple of people, they trained a couple of dogs, she raised money in that wealthy society, and in New Jersey, 1929, they started their first guide dog school, and the dogs are very well trained from the time they try to breed them for a certain size, color, health. And then they wean them away from the mother, and they put them with a 4-H family, which a number of wonderful volunteers to raise these dogs. I mean, these dogs have volunteers, not just the average Joe. I mean, these dogs have lived a life of luxury. Like for my instance, this is my seventh guide dog, Raven, and when I got her profile here, she was on a yacht. The people that raised her went to a summer home. And I told them, I don't know if I could take this dog home because I don't know if I can continue this dog's lifestyle, a living. And so just know anybody raised these dogs. After we were puppy raised for, which they referred to them for about a year, then they put them through their paces to see if their personality and all it was suited for this type of work. They have to be really sound dogs. And then the trainer trained with them for 4 months, giving them formal training, teaching them how to go on train buses, cross streets with you, go into restaurants, sit down prop. You don't even know they're there. Half the time when I have my guide dog with me and I'm sitting someplace, so then they say, and then they move or something, or we give them, they say, I didn't know a dog was there. That's how well they train. And we always like to say among guide dog users and instructors, if there's a guide dog cutting up, not doing what it's supposed to do, it is not the dog's fault. 9 times out of 10, the handler is not doing what it's supposed to do when it was trained. So it's so important with the guide dogs to be able to assist a person that's blind in restaurants, in hotels, on trains and planes and all. And we had and they worked hard to get dogs, guide dogs accepted through, the attractiveness of the dog, the obedience of the dog. They worked hard to get them to go be accepted into the public. And unfortunately, for some reason, some people lobbied and felt that, that they wanted the regulations. The regulation was very, very stiff and rigid about training a service animal. But some folks got together, and they lobbied and got the laws, the training laws, loosened or eased on the requirements of having a guide, a service animal. So now the laws are so loosened that a person can consider themselves, they could just say that they're a trainer and they're training a service animal, even though they have no formal training or anything. And the dog or whatever they train an animal doesn't even have those kind of training. But people, you know, can say that if they that they need this animal because they got emotional problems. A lot of times the people with emotional problems saying they need these pets for emotional therapy and all. And the animals are not well trained, so they get to go into restaurants and all these public places, and then these animals act out like the pig on the. They had a lady said she needed the pig because it helped her emotionally, and it was on the plane and it was running all over the place, and then it had the peacock as Miss Renee mentioned, and it pecked somebody, and then someone had a snake, and and so it got to the point that it sort of set the guide dog. All the work that guide dogs have done, organizations and schools have done to get the public to accept guide dogs or dog as a working dog, it has set it back 50 years. Now we're back to and a number of the industries like some of the airplane industries have put out requirements, you know, now that they have their own requirements that, you know, the dog have to be trained or animal have to be trained or you have to show certain proof and all that kind of thing before you can get on planes and stuff now. So the Guide Dog Association of Guide Dog Schools and all are fighting and trying to get back instituted some type of regulation, some type of guidelines on training animals. So that's one of the things, you know, Charlie, and that's what we've been working on. And matter of fact, Ms. Renee, I meant to mention to you yesterday that Washington, D.C. and Maryland does not have a law. Now, they do have just the standard misdemeanor law that if somebody, dog bites someone and, you know, they can sue them and that kind of thing. But they don't have a guide dog protection law. And what the guide dog protection law is that we want it where it's a criminal act if someone or another dog attack a guide dog, especially if they injure the dog, where, you know, it's not like if you have a car accident, the dealership can give you a loan car. It doesn't work like that. You know, your dog get injured, it can affect your mobility and, you know, you being able to go to work and all. So we are working on that law, and if you read the Dusky law that New Jersey, that a German Shepherd about 9 months old was badly injured to the point that it couldn't even work anymore. And that's the thing. If your dog is injured because of a stray dog running, or unfortunately it's usually a person that don't have control of it, their dog. So a law, so Maryland and D.C., Virginia has a law, protection law for guide dogs. Maryland and D.C. did not have one. And when we started CAGDU, and I became the president of CAGDU organization, where I got my guide dog from, CNI got in touch with me, the advocacy person, and, you know, was telling me about it and said something we need to work on. So fortunately, with my job working for a county councilman at large, I have some connections and got to know some people. And I asked a delegate of ours here, knew another organization named Delegate Nicole Williams. She said that she would sponsor the bill for me, and she called me yesterday to asked to let me know that they were doing some final work on it, and it was okay because she is going to base it on the Dusky bill that was recently passed last year in New Jersey, or so. And I told her yeah, and she wanted to know what to name the bill, and I said wow, because the Dusky bill was named because of the dog that was attacked, and I say well, I don't have anyone here that, you know, dog, guide dogs would attack savagely. And I was joking when I said, well, do you want me to stage something or what? She said, no, I don't think we need to do that. I said, well, okay, so let's just call it. So we just settled on the Maryland protection, Maryland guide dog protection law. So she's working on that. So that's going to be a first, and I might, I don't know, Renee, maybe Charlie Law. I don't know. Maybe I'll call her back and talk to her about that. But you hear the music now, and we're getting ready to go on station break. And again, this is a special honor to, tribute to Charlie Crawford, our co-host. Passed this morning of 9/11 September 2020, and we going to thank his wife Sue for letting him share the time he shared with us, and we'll be back on the other side of the break.
We want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C. They carry raw, organic, and premium dog foods. If your dog needs it, they more than likely have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, located in the nation's capital. Back over to you, Reverend Ray, and our special program honoring our co-host, Charles Charlie Crawford, who passed this morning, 9/11/2020.
Reverend Ray, back with you, CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. And this, in the half an hour, we would have been doing Charlie's Corner. And the thing with, you know, Charlie C, information from and for the DMV. And it is sponsored by NCAC, and that's the National Capital Area Chapter, which is affiliate of the American Council of the Blind, which they meet in Silver Springs, and they usually meet every third Thursday. From 6 to 7, they would have dinner. And from 7 to 8, a little after 8, they would have the meeting. And at 8 o'clock, they would all run to the bar because they had it in the Sheraton Hotel.
Charlie did not run to the bar. Some of the other adult beverage participants did. But we want to make sure that Charlie doesn't.
And they held that meeting every third Thursday, and it was Sheraton Park Hotel, and that was the 7,000 block of Georgia Avenue in Silver Springs. And Mr. Pat Sheehan is the president of that chapter right now. And we have had him on the show several times. And even when Charlie was ill, he sat in Charlie's seat with wheels on it, as Ms. Renee said, but they wouldn't get comfortable. And we did come up with a little Pat's place. But anyway,
I want to go back, Reverend. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, you wanted to make another comment about
that? Go ahead. Yes, go ahead.
I was going back to the subject that we'd started before the station break. You know, a couple things you glossed over, and I think it's really important. We covered the dog protection law, which is really important, because you talked about how people would lose their mobility and independence. I want to talk a little bit more about these families who raise dogs. Now, I come to love the dogs or the pets or whatever we have in our home, but these young people, and most of them are young people, the family agrees to it, but the teenager is the one that's primarily responsible for the care of the dog. And after 9 months or thereabouts, they give this dog back to Seeing Eye. I'll talk about Seeing Eye because I know about how their program works. I cannot imagine how you play with this dog, train this dog, acclimate the dog. Because one of the things when the dogs are being raised by this teenager, they are not just regular dogs. They have special harness and a special way that indicate that they are training. So they are allowed to go into stores. And so the puppy handler has to keep the dog from sniffing things that the dog shouldn't. Maybe if there's food low, they have to correct them. If they go into a restaurant, they have to correct them. But I think what's always amazing to me is that these teenagers, and teenagers get, you know, a bad rap about so many things, millennials now, we don't even call them teens, but they're millennials now. They raise these dogs with all the love and nurturing and socialization that these dogs need in order to help a blind person, and they give that dog up, and they come back in a year or so, and they do it all over. It's an amazing process to me. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, and what they call it is socializing the dog. And so they have so the guide dog schools, and several of them do this. They have they call them puppy raisers. That's a whole program. And, of course, they really vet the family that they can either provide the necessary space, the necessary time to spend with the dog, the proper protocols and all. And so the schools will train the person, the teenager have to be at least, I think, 14 or 15 years old, depends on the school, and that their family is going to support them in that. But the teenager is the person that's primarily responsible for the socialization of the dog. And what they do, they get credentials saying, you know, in a picture that they are puppy raisers, this is the dog they have. So they get to take it into stores, and they get to take it on the elevator and the escalator and try to simulate just being around people and the dog can socialize, not the formal training, but just socialization of the dog, of being around people, going in the stores, or getting on the buses, going on the trains and that kind of thing. That's why I say what my dog I have now, Raven, she was on yachts and boats and airplanes and, you know, all this kind of stuff, living in, going to the summer home by the beach and all of that. And that's what they do. And the puppy raisers, then they have a meeting once a month, and they have to keep a diary of what the puppy does. And that's what they give someone like me, a student that come and get the dog. For you just know the tendency of your dog. Some dogs might like to play with balls. Some dogs might like to don't want to play with this, might not want. So you know the tendencies, and you know, and if dog has any type of illness or been hurt or whatever. So and it is difficult. And the other thing is that after you the puppy raise the puppy, then it'll go and train with a trainer for 4 months, and then it's hard on that trainer. After that trainer train a dog 4 months every day with the dog, it's hard on them to separate from that dog. And then the dog goes to a third phase, well, really a fourth phase of being matched with a student, a handler, because the first phase is a dog is with his mother, and then it goes into a kennel, and they have kennel buddies and all, and then, I mean, you know, then it go to a puppy raiser, and then from the puppy raiser it goes to a trainer, and then the trainer keeps it in the kennel with certain dogs, and they become kennel buddies, and then it comes home with someone like me that has no clue who I am or nothing. By this time, the dog is almost 2 years old. All righty. So it is quite a process. One of the things that me and Charlie, that we doing a tribute to him that passed today, this morning, from a stroke he had a couple of days ago and didn't recover. We here in this area, the DMV in Clinton, Maryland, I am a member of the Lions Club, and the Lions Club sponsor a school called Leading Eyes, where they have a guide dog school. And in this area, I recently found out that they have a couple that raises, and they in charge of the puppy raiser program here. So we are going to have them, or we're going to have them as guests still, and Ms. Renee, and that, and you will hear them talk about how the whole process, and you know, them giving dogs out for puppy raisers to raise them and all. So you bringing that up, that we are going to have that, because people have asked about that process of raising dogs. But let me ask you something, Ms. Renee, that just occurred to me, and I don't know if that's a possibility. But with Charlie passing, we getting ready to do this protection program bill. I wonder if any kind of way we could justify naming it after Charlie. I mean, I don't know. He's on his ninth guide dog, and he had him for quite a while, and he was quite an advocate for this and fighting along with this bill. So I don't know.
It's something we can explore. But, you know, we keep talking about Charlie as an advocate, and we talk about the importance of this Maryland dog protection law, because as you're describing what this puppy goes through, because we want to let people know that the puppy raisers earn college scholarships. They earn scholarships. So all along the way, you know, there's an investment in money and there's an outlay in money, and that the dog protection law not only protects the handler at the final end, and you talked about how if a dog guide is unable to work, that the mobility of the handler is affected, their independent medical bills. But even before a dog gets into the hand of a end user, approximately how much in dollars is invested in this dog? What does it cost? I mean, he's not like the average dog that's not well bred. I mean, some of these breeding programs are pretty intense. So what would you say that the cost of getting a dog to the handler, how much is that?
Let me lay some ground on that just to give you an idea. First, the dogs are, as I said, they have a genetic, and the dogs are bred to make sure they don't have hip dysplasia or any other type of, you know, ongoing disease or illnesses that dogs have. So they have a genetics that do that. They recently, CNI guide dog school, because I'm familiar with them, but other guide dog schools have recently gone to, CNI had recently gone to Germany and bought two strings of dogs to put fresh blood, introduce fresh blood into their guide dog program. So, and those dogs are expensive. These are not cheap dogs to do this. So they have a breeding farm and genetics. Okay, so they have that. Don't know what that costs. Okay, then they have, you know, people. They have, you know, medical people, outstanding doctors and vets, and you know, lab technician and all this to make sure the dogs properly have all the shots and that material you got to buy for the shots and the medication and the tests. And CNI, I know recently in the last few years built like over $5 million. Facility, a medical facility for, you know, for their dog, for the dogs. And then you have the kennels, where you have the kennel people to keep the dogs while the dog's being trained day to day. And usually they have each class that lasts for 30 days with 18 to 22 students. Their trainers, usually each of those four trainers, usually train in a string of dogs, at least 12 dogs, a string of 12 dogs for four months, okay? And then you got the facilities where the dogs have to stay, the people have to stay, all of that. All righty. And so you figure the time, you add all of that up in money. These dogs from a lab or retriever up to a German Shepherd or coated German Shepherd can cost anywhere from $65,000 to $95,000. Okay, that's our music for our break where we pay bills and Miss Renee and them got to get raises and that kind of thing. So who's we going to have to go on the other side? And you'll listen to CAGDU about your dog and you, a show where we talk about service dogs, how they influence, how they assist person with that's blind to have a enhanced lifestyle. And we'll be back on the other side.
You are listening to CAGDU about your dog and you. CAGDU is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, located in the nation's capital. Today is a special show dedicated to our co-host, Charlie Crawford. Reverend Ray.
All righty. Thank you, Ms. Renee. And I tell you, you know, like you say, the day is 9/11, with 19 years ago when the Twin Towers was destroyed by airplanes. And so many people, I think over 3,000 people died or something like that, and all, and it was a tragedy. And today, the tragedy for the disability community, specifically the blind, that our co-host and founder of CAGDU About Your Dog and You radio show passed this morning just before 5 a.m., excuse me, and we want to send our wishes out to his wife, Sue, and family. And Sue is also, if you've been listening to the show, she's blind, and she also has a guide dog. She has some vision. We used to say in the blind community, just enough to get yourself in trouble. But she also has a guide dog, so we send our love out to her. And the next show that we do, we're going to do a proper tribute to Charlie, and maybe have some of his friends on and co-hosts to say some things about him. But also, again, I want to thank Ms. Renee for twisting me and Charlie's arm about it took two shows for me and Charlie to share our journey up to this point. Both of us were sighted, and we both lost our sight. We was not born blind. And became somewhat productive, got into the disability movement, specifically the blind movement, and also found it interesting and rewarding to get guide dogs. And just so happened we got them from the same school, CNI Guide Dog School in New Jersey, the oldest guide dog school in the United States, started in January the 29th, 1929. And Charlie was on his ninth dog, and he was looking to get ready to retire him, and he wasn't sure with his health if he was going away to get a tenth. I just recently got my seventh dog, and that's Miss Raven, a German Shepherd, coated German Shepherd. And a coated German Shepherd is only 3 to 5% of all shepherds born are coated. And coated is a long-haired shepherd, a little longer hair. And I like to say and proud to say they're a little more above intelligent than shepherds are. Even though shepherds are very intelligent and very handsome, she is beautiful and exceptionally intelligent. And just a funny story, I was on a paratransit one day when I just, you know, recently gotten her, because I had my other dog with her before Miss Raven was a Retico. He was a big, mass German Shepherd, close to 100 pounds. And so having my new dog, Miss Ray, and Mr. Retico, he let, you know, like no nonsense, didn't care. He'd get on Metro Access, paratransit, you know, lay down and just didn't mind his business and close his eyes. Well, Miss Raven, she was on the paratransit, and I had ridden with this driver before. And he said, "Oh, Mr. Ray, you got a new dog?" I said, "Yeah." And so he said, I'm kind of scared of that dog. I said, "Well," he said, "that dog looking at me." I said, "Well, you looking at her, aren't you?" He said, "Yeah, but she looked like she's thinking about something." So I'm just saying to say with these coded shepherds, they are so intelligent, look like, you know, they thinking all the time. So, and I appreciate CNI Guide Dog School to be a part of that, as with Charlie Trumpet, their accomplishments and how they contribute to the blind community. And me and Charlie decided it would be so appropriate when we started CAGDU about your dog and you, that in April that they will be our first guest. They will be our maiden voyage. And we appreciate that. And Charlie was responsible for all with the guests, with the very special guests that we had. Top of the line people that serve in some very special and important positions and decision making in the blind community, that also affect the disability community as well. So, Ms. Renee, do you have another observation?
Yeah, I absolutely do. You know, one of Charlie's passions was advocacy. And, you know, we talk about civil rights, and we also talk about the advocacy that persons with disabilities had to create for themselves. And I have a sticker that says, "Rooted in rights." You know, once again, groups have to advocate for themselves. And the two big advocacy organizations in the blind community are the National Federation of the Blind and the American Council of the Blind. I'd like for you to share with listeners why that preposition, yes, all of you who didn't pay attention in English, it's the little short word, of, is so important in the title of both organizations.
And let me explain it this way. You heard of Columbia Lighthouse for the Blind. And that means that there's maybe not any blind people that actually provide services for the blind. And they might be, you know, only able-bodied people, as we call them, that's doing something for the blind. And then you heard of the Commission for the Blind. And here again, they making decisions for blind people, what they think is best for blind people. The National Federation of the Blind and American Council of the Blind, those are organizations where blind people are in the decision of making positions as the president, the treasurer, the secretary, the executive director, those people are making decisions for their self that are blind and for the blind community. And not only that, the term that is used now is acts us for us. Persons that's not blind or have nothing to do with blindness, they can't make the right decision. I'm not going to say they can't make the decision, because they've been making the decision for blind people, but they can't make the right decisions or the proper decision for blind people, because they don't know what the needs of blind people are. And so these organizations was created to be able to advocate, to lobby Congress, to lobby the Senate, to lobby their local districts and local government on what the needs of blind persons are, and that's why they call it UB, the National Federation of the Blind, which is have over 700 chapters in the United States, the Virgin Islands, and Canada, and over 50,000 members, and their offices are based and located in Baltimore, Maryland, and then the American Council of the Blind, they have a little over 30,000 members, I believe, and their offices are located in Arlington, Virginia. And so that is the difference. UB is that people that's blind is in the decision-making position, and they understand what their needs are, whereas people that's for is doing something for you, and sometimes they have no idea or ask you to come to the table to explain what they're doing. And so and it's a big education. You know, we have to educate the public again that blind people. And let me give you for example. There was a gentleman that got a grant, a $100,000 grant from the government. And his grant was to build a toilet for blind people can hold on two handles when they go to the bathroom before they wouldn't fall off the toilet. Now,
yes,
and he actually got a grant. Okay, so that is the closing.
But you know, before we close out, and you know, we read the letter from Penny Reeder opening on the sad news of Charlie Crawford's passing. But Charlie, prior to coming to D.C., was appointed the commissioner in 1984. For the Commission for the Blind. And that's why it's so important. Only now, after years and years and years of advocacy, are blind people in the position now where they can decide for themselves what kind of services they need and not a two-handed toilet. Okay, I'm just saying, you know, you've got to be in the position to advocate for yourself.
And that's what it's all about, and that's why we even now in this climate are starting to encourage people with disability and blind people to run for office. Local politics is the beginning of being not an influencer, but a decision maker. You've been listening to CAGDU About Your Dog and You, and I'm your host, Reverend Ray Razor, and the sad news that Al, co-host and founder and friend and brother, Mr. Charlie Crawford, passed this morning on Friday, September 9/11/2020. And we give our blessings and our love to his wife, Susan, who survived him and his family. So this is CAGDU. Please go to our website, CAGDU.org, and read and listen to the two shows that me and Charlie shared about our life walk. So, as we like to say, hug your honey, but pet your pup. Reverend Ray Razor, God bless and be blessed.
You have been listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You, Capital Area Dog Guide Users, Inc., located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is CAGDU2020@gmail.com. That's CAGDU2020@gmail.com, or call us at 301-263-7371. Again, that's 301-263-7371. Want to hear a past show? Go to our website, CAGDU.org. Until next week, we'll see you at the same time. God bless.